Imagine a scenario for a second. You are the CTO of a mid-sized fintech company, or maybe, a scaling health tech startup.
Okay, I'm picturing it.
And you've just integrated this really powerful large language model into your customer service workflow, let's say from OpenAI or Anthropic.
Right. Very common right now.
Exactly. So it summarizes tickets, drafts a few responses, maybe it even helps spot some basic fraud patterns. Now, you didn't build the model.
You're just paying for the API.
Right. You feel pretty safe, right? I mean, you're just a user. You're driving the car, you didn't build the engine.
Yeah, and that is the default setting for almost everyone in the industry right now, that I'm just a user mentality.
But according to the sources for our deep dive today, that's actually a massive legal minefield.
It's what's known as the Article 25 trap under the new EU AI Act. And it is a trap that snaps shut incredibly fast.
And that's exactly what we are unpacking today, this very specific, very dangerous mechanism in the regulation.
Because it can instantly, and I really mean instantly, flip your legal status from a simple deployer to a fully liable provider.
And we aren't just talking about, a minor paperwork headache here.
Oh, no, not a slap on the wrist. We are talking about a shift that suddenly exposes you to fines of up to 7% of your global annual turnover.
7%? I mean, that is company-ending money. That's turn-off-the-lights-and-go-home money.
Absolutely.
So our mission for this deep dive is clear. We're going to dissect this legal distinction between a deployer and a provider. We're going to walk through the three specific triggers in Article 25 that blur that line.
And because we don't just want to terrify you, we're going to look at how to actually navigate this.
Right, using a framework from Daykey, specifically their demo room tool.
It's vital stuff because this isn't just legal theory anymore. If you get this wrong, you might find yourself needing to reverse engineer compliance for a model you didn't even build.
Scary stuff. So let's start with the definitions. The identity crisis, so to speak. In the blue corner, we have the deployer. In the red corner, the provider.
Right.
Who are these people in the eyes of the Brussels regulators?
Well, the deployer is the persona basically every company wants to be. The definition is pretty standard. It's any natural or legal person using an AI system under their authority for professional use.
Okay, so let's stick with that car analogy from earlier. If I buy a fleet of delivery vans for my logistics company, I am a deployer of those vans.
Perfect analogy. You didn't build the vans. You bought them from Ford or Mercedes. Mm. You just have to use them responsibly.
Make sure the drivers have licenses. Make sure they aren't going 100 miles an hour in a school zone.
Exactly. And get the oil changed. Your liability is limited entirely to how you use the tool.
Right. I don't need to crash test the van myself. I assume the manufacturer did that.
Correct. So now swap that van for an AI model. If you use, say, ChatGPT Enterprise to summarize internal meeting notes, you are a deployer.
So I have some obligations, sure.
Yeah, mostly around human oversight, data privacy, making sure your staff actually knows how to use it. But you aren't responsible for the neural network architecture.
Okay, that feels safe, manageable. So then who is the provider?
The provider is the entity that develops the AI system, or has it developed, and places it on the market under their own name or trademark.
So this is Ford, this is Toyota, this is OpenAI.
Right. They built the engine, they carry the heavy bag.
The heaviest bag, really.
Oh, absolutely. Providers have to conduct complex conformity assessments. They have to produce extensive technical documentation, set up quality management systems.
And they're responsible for the entire life cycle of that AI.
Yes. If the engine explodes due to a design flaw, it is on them.
Okay, so this seems like a really clear division of labor. OpenAI builds it, I use it, I stay in my deployer lane, they stay in their provider lane.
Right, everyone's happy.
So why is there confusion? Why are we calling this a trap?
Because software isn't a physical car. It's malleable. It changes. And this is exactly where Article 25 comes in.
The trapdoor.
Yes. It's a section of the AI Act that basically says, we don't care who built the code originally. If you do certain things, we are going to treat you as if you were the manufacturer.
Wow. So you inherit the liability. It's like a cursed object in a fantasy novel. You touch it, you own the curse.
You inherit the liability, the documentation requirements, and the potential fines. Even if you don't have the source code. Even if you don't actually understand how the model works mathematically.
That is terrifying. So let's walk through this minefield. How do I accidentally spring this trap? What's the first trigger?
The first one is the white label trigger. This is Article 25, paragraph 1.A.
Okay.
The text says that if you put your name or trademark on a high-risk AI system that is already on the market, you become the provider.
Wait, just branding. Like, let's play this out.
Okay.
I license a medical triage AI from a third-party developer. It's a great tool, highly rated, totally compliant. I integrate it into my app and I call it the Deep Dive Health Bot. I slap our logo in the corner because I want my customers to associate that value with my brand.
Well, congratulations. You are now the provider.
But I didn't touch the code. I just put a wrapper on it. I just made it look nice.
The law views it as you presenting the system as your own. By placing your trademark on it, you're signaling to the consumer that you stand behind this product.
So I have to assume the responsibility for its safety.
Precisely.
That feels incredibly aggressive.
It is, but it's designed to stop companies from hiding behind a supply chain. Imagine if that health bot gave bad advice that hurt someone.
Right.
The regulator doesn't want to hear, "Oh, go sue the white label dev shop in another country." They see your name on the box, so you pay the fine.
Okay, so rule number one, don't slap your sticker on high-risk AI unless you have the technical documentation to back it up. If you white label it, you own it.
Exactly. Transparency is key here.
Okay, trigger one is branding. What's the second trigger? This one sounds a bit more technical.
This is the one that keeps engineers up at night. Article 25, 1B. The substantial modification trigger.
Oh boy. Substantial is a very slippery word in the legal world.
It really is.
Because in modern software development, we're deploying changes 10 times a day. We're constantly tweaking prompts, adjusting temperature settings, maybe adding a RAG layer retrieval augmented generation to feed it our own data.
Right.
Where is the line?
That is the danger zone. The Act defines a substantial modification as a change to the AI system that affects its compliance status or intended purpose in a way that was not foreseen in the initial conformity assessment.
So if I take the stock engine and I bore out the cylinders to make it go faster.
Exactly. If you take a general purpose model and you fundamentally change its training data, say, you fine-tune it on a specialized medical data set that the original model wasn't tested for.
You've made a substantial modification.
You have. Because the original manufacturer, let's say OpenAI, they never tested it for that specific medical niche.
They can't vouch for it anymore.
Right. You voided the warranty regarding safety. The original provider cannot vouch for how that model behaves now that you've retrained it.
So the liability shifts to me. I built a new engine on top of the old one. But what about prompt engineering? If I have a system prompt that says, "You are a helpful assistant," and I change it to, "You are a ruthlessly efficient financial advisor," is that substantial?
It depends on the impact. If that prompt change causes the AI to start giving regulated financial advice, then yes. But purely on a technical level, substantial modification usually implies retraining or changing the architecture.
Okay.
However, the line is blurring. If your RREG system feeds the model data that completely changes its behavior, you might be crossing that line.
Which leads us to that third trigger, Article 25, 1C. You hinted at it just now. This seems like the most common trap for startups.
It is absolutely the most common trap. This is the intended purpose trigger. It happens when you take a system that isn't classified as high risk and you modify its intended purpose to something that is high risk.
Give me a concrete example. Paint the picture.
Okay, take a basic chatbot. Its intended purpose, per the documentation from the provider, is customer service FAQ automation. That is likely limited risk. You don't need a heavy compliance stack for that. If it messes up, it tells you the wrong return policy. Annoying, but not life-threatening.
Yeah, no one dies if the return policy is wrong.
Precisely. But then your product team gets a bright idea. They say, "Hey, we have all this chat data. Let's use this same bot to analyze the customer's tone and payment history to determine if they should be approved for a loan extension."
That sounds like a very useful feature for a business.
It is a very useful feature.
Yeah.
It's also a one-way ticket to being a high-risk provider.
Really?
Yes. Evaluating creditworthiness is explicitly listed in Annex 3rd of the AI Act as a high-risk use case.
So I took a safe car and I started using it as an ambulance.
You changed the intended purpose. The original provider certified it for chat. You are using it for credit scoring. Therefore, you become the provider of a high-risk system.
Wow. So I am now responsible for proving that system is unbiased, robust, accurate, and secure.
Yes, you are.
And here's the kicker. I'm guessing many companies doing this don't even realize they've shifted categories. They think, it's just an API integration. I didn't train GPT-4. I'm safe.
That is the massive blind spot. The sources highlight a specific misconception regarding general purpose AI or GPAI.
What's the misconception?
Companies think that because they are downstream of the big labs, they're invisible.
Right.
But Article 50 applies to everyone. Users must be informed they're interacting with a machine,
Right.
And if you cross that line into high-risk use cases, the "I'm just a user" defense evaporates instantly.
Let's talk about the fallout from that. We mentioned the 7% fine. That's the big scary number. But I want to know what this looks like operationally. Let's say I'm that CTO. I accidentally triggered Article 25. The regulator knocks on my door on Tuesday morning. What do they ask for?
They ask for your technical documentation for Annex 4V compliance.
Yeah.
They want to see your data governance logs. They want to see your bias assessments.
And your training data validation records. And I don't have them because I didn't build a base model.
Right. You are asked to show the training data lineage. You didn't train it. You don't have access to OpenAI's proprietary data set.
So I'm effectively being asked to provide the blueprints for an engine I bought off the shelf.
Exactly. So it's not just a fine. It's operational paralysis. You literally cannot prove your product is legal.
Wow.
The source material explicitly lists lack of technical expertise and expensive and lengthy outsourcing as top reasons AI projects fail in this new landscape. You end up having to reverse engineer compliance for a black box.
And for general purpose AI specifically, Article 101 mentions fines up to 3% of turnover, or 15 million euros. So even if you don't hit the nuclear 7% tier, the floor is still incredibly high.
It's high enough to bankrupt a startup, and frankly, high enough to make a board of directors fire a CTO at a large enterprise. It's not a risk you can ignore.
Okay, we have established the trap is real, the spikes are sharp, and it is very easy to fall in. Let's pivot to solutions. We aren't here just to spread doom and gloom.
No, definitely not.
Our sources focus on a platform called Daiki. They seem to be framing this as an AI governance problem. What's their angle?
Well, Daiki's is interesting because it originates from a research collaboration between a machine learning company, Gradient Zero, and Professor Mark Kochelberg from the University of Vienna.
I recognize that name. He's a heavyweight in AI ethics and philosophy of technology.
He is. So the tool has this holistic DNA. It isn't just a legal checklist made by lawyers who don't understand code. It's built by ML engineers and ethicists.
That makes sense.
Their core promise is what they call the robotics compliance bridge.
That sounds fancy, but what does it actually do?
It bridges the gap between your development tools and the legal requirements. One of the standout features mentioned in the source is the 70% pre-fill.
Pre-filling forms. That sounds like a tax software feature.
In a way, it is. But think about the complexity of Annex 4 documentation. It requires details about model architecture, data sources, version history, test results.
Right.
Daiki integrates with your tech stack, your Jira, your GitHub, your Slack.
So it scrapes the technical reality of the project.
Exactly. It pulls the metadata directly from the code and the project management tools to pre-fill about 70% of the required compliance documentation.
That is huge for engineers. Because I can tell you, nobody became a machine learning engineer because they wanted to write legal briefs.
It allows the developers to focus on optimizing the model's accuracy rather than hunting down data lineage logs from 6 months ago. It turns compliance from a blocker into a background process.
They also talk about an AI registry and fingerprinting. Is this like a VIN number for the model?
That's a great analogy. It generates a unique AI registry fingerprint. This is crucial for trust.
How so?
It allows you to prove your model is compliant or compare it to others without actually disclosing your trade secrets or your sensitive training data.
I see. You show the badge, not the blueprint.
Right. It gives you a visual proof of commitment, a digital compliance passport you can show to enterprise clients or regulators.
But let's go back to our Article 25 trap, because this is the crux of the deep dive. How does a tool like this help a company realize they are about to cross the line from deployer to provider?
Because that's the moment of danger.
Exactly.
This is where their demo room comes in. This is the hook. Right now, companies are guessing. They sit in a conference room and ask, is credit scoring high risk? Is an HR bot high risk? What if we use it for education?
And if they guess wrong, they either overspend on compliance they don't need or they get fined.
Right. So Daiki replaces the guessing with an AI assistant. You enter the demo room, and instead of reading a 400-page PDF of the EU AI Act, the assistant interviews you.
So it acts like a consultant.
Yes. It asks targeted questions about your specific project. Is this system intended for education? Does it impact someone's access to employment? Are you modifying the intended purpose from the original documentation? Are you using biometric data?
And based on your answers,
it automatically classifies the system according to the Act. No risk, low risk, high risk, or unacceptable risk.
That is incredibly valuable for peace of mind, but is it legally binding?
Well, no software is a judge,
mm.
But what it gives you is a defensible audit trail.
Explain that. Why does the audit trail matter so much?
If a regulator comes knocking in 2026 and asks, why did you classify this subsystem as non-high risk? You don't just say, well, Bob in engineering thought it was fine.
Right, Bob isn't going to save you.
Exactly. You pull up the Dakey log, you show the decision logic, you show that you did your due diligence based on the information you had at the time.
So it's an insurance policy against negligence?
It proves you tried. And in regulatory law, showing a robust process counts for a lot. Plus, considering the complexity of Article 25, where a single update can shift your liability, having a system that tracks drift is vital.
Right, because software lives and breathes. If I update the model 6 months from now, Dakey's system is designed to flag that.
Yes. It warns you, hey, this update constitutes a substantial modification. You are about to become a provider. Are you sure you want to do this?
That is the guardrail. That is what prevents the CTO from accidentally betting the company on a software patch.
The sources emphasize that most AI projects fail because they don't assess these risks in time. They wait until the product is built. By then, if you find out you're a high-risk provider, re-architecting for compliance might be too expensive.
You just have to scrap the project.
Yeah.
You have to bake the compliance in from the first sprint.
Or, as Dickey puts it, turn compliance into confidence. If you know exactly where the landmines are, you can run faster than the competitor who is tiptoeing around in the dark.
So let's synthesize this. For the listener who is managing AI integration right now, maybe they are a product manager, maybe they are legal counsel, maybe they are just a curious dev. What are the big takeaways?
First, strip away the illusion of safety. Do not assume that using an API makes you just a deployer. The distinction is technical, it is fluid, and Article 25 is designed to catch people who modify systems without thinking.
If you rebrand it, or if you repurpose it for something sensitive, or if you retrain it, you own it.
Second, manual compliance is dead. The regulation is too complex, and the data requirements are too heavy for spreadsheets. You need infrastructure for governance, just like you need infrastructure for hosting.
Tools like Dakey aren't optional add-ons anymore. They're becoming part of the stack.
Exactly. And finally, look at the calendar. The transparency rules and high-risk obligations are phasing in. 2026 sounds far away, but in product development cycles, that is tomorrow. You need to know your status now.
I want to leave the listener with a thought that struck me while reading through the Article 25 text. It's a bit of a paradox, and I want to see what you think about this.
Go on.
We talked about substantial modification triggering liability. Suppose a company takes a generic open source AI model and they realize it has some racial bias or it's not quite safe enough for their specific users.
Okay.
So they do the responsible thing. They heavily modify it. They retrain it to be safer, to be less biased, to be better.
Oh, I see where you're going. This is the irony of the regulation.
Right. By doing the right thing, by modifying the engine to improve safety, they trigger Article 25, 1B. They have made a substantial modification. They are now fully liable as the provider.
Whereas if they just used the generic, slightly less safe version out of the box,
they likely would have remained a simple deployer with lower liability. It's a perverse incentive.
It really is. The regulation aims to increase safety, but the liability structure could, in these specific edge cases, punish the companies that are actually trying to fix the models.
It's a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation.
It forces you to really trust your engineering. If you're going to modify it, you better be ready to stand behind it 100%. Innovation now requires not just courage, but a really good audit trail.
It puts a premium on knowing exactly what you are building.
And a good map of the minefield.
So, to everyone listening, don't guess. If you are sitting there wondering if your chatbot is about to cost you 7% of your revenue, go check out the Dakey demo room. Let the AI assistant triage your exact use case. It is much better to know now than to find out in a courtroom.
Absolutely. Stay safe out there.
That's it for this deep dive. Stay curious, stay compliant, and we'll catch you on the next one.